Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Rose!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. This episode is our first of a two-part pregame show leading up to January 9th National Championship showdown between Alabama and LSU. In this show, we'll cover Alabama's defense against LSU's offense, and we'll sprinkle in some bowl season happenings for good measure. Tom, you ready to do this?
I am definitely ready to do this. The fact that we're doing this special podcast means that we are in the big game. And, you know, a month ago, we did not think this was going to happen. And so the fact that we get to even talk about this rematch is very exciting.
It absolutely is. You know, coming out of the game in November, we held out hope that there was a chance. And then that chance has really come to fruition. A lot of things had to happen to bring this to bear. And indeed, it does appear as if the best two teams in the country do reside in the same division of the same conference, and they get to duel it out again in New Orleans.
They do. And looking back, you know, I know for the listeners, we went back and we looked at the first game and broke that down, and we tried to look at it from the standpoint of, you know, if we're in the film room and we're trying to break down these tendencies and what worked the first time and what didn't work, and it's almost like a chess match and, you know, what's going to be your next move. And, you know, I think you'll agree with me that, you know, Alabama did a lot of things right on both sides of the ball. I think they have less to tweak than LSU, but they've got to be more consistent. They have to be able to finish on both sides of the ball.
I agree. One thing that to me is very clear when you anticipate this game, and I don't really hear it anywhere in the national media, but these two teams know each other. They are, in a sense, very comfortable with each other. They both know what the other team wants to do and what they're going to do in a lot of ways. They both play a style of offense or style of game that's very physical, it's very aggressive, it's very smash mouth. It travels well, and it does not get rusty in this delayed bowl season time between games. I think it's going to be a contest from the start. I don't think there's going to be any really feeling out period. It's going to kick off, and it's going to play much like literally a fifth quarter from the game in November.
That's a good point. I mean, for, you know, I do think the score is going to be different, and I guess we can get to that at the end, but it is almost like, you know, the two teams went into the locker room and, you know, had some Gatorade and taped up a little bit, and here we go again. I guess if we start from the standpoint of the LSU offense versus the Alabama defense, you know, what was interesting for me in that ball game is all we had to do was make one score in that first half. If we could have finished one drive and made that a 13-3 ball game in the first half, we would have put them on their heels. Because what's interesting when you go back and break down the stats, and obviously this is a different team with Jordan Jefferson now kind of running things, in all of their games this year, even with the two quarterback system, 7 of their 13 ball games, they only attempted 10 or less passes. Unlike us that has a lot of balance, LSU is all about the run. I mean, when you go back and look at their stats, they had 48 carries, 46 carries, 49, 49, 50, just to name a few. So it's all about ball control, and it's all about running the ball and doing the play action pass. And so as we talk about this matchup, we have got to put them in third and long situations and make Jordan Jefferson beat us with his arm, because this team is just not set up to pass the ball.
Well, they're really not. And even the success that they have had with Jordan Jefferson, he runs the ball for them quite successfully. And we talked about that before the first game, and we saw it happen in the first game. He does a lot of zone reads and a lot of option ball. And they had some success against us in November running that style of play. I think we will be better prepared for that, having played Georgia Southern and Auburn, we've definitely seen some more option. We're going to be, you know, geared up to defend that in this game. And I think they're going to have to do something a little bit uncharacteristic. I don't think they want to bring Jordan Lee back in, but they're going to have to do something. Maybe it's passing with Jefferson or bringing Lee in a little bit. Like you said, the play action is certainly something that they're going to try to do. They're also going to try to, you know, kind of harken back to the 70s with the Raiders, where they're going to try to suck you in with some run and some physical near the line of scrimmage play and then try to throw over our heads.
Well, I do think that they are going to stick with the play action pass. They're going to stick with the I formation. They're going to try to pound the ball early and see if they can get some holes. But
they're going to take their shots. Don't think they're not going to take their shots.
I think they're going to take their shots. But just like we saw in the game, you know, even that pass in the first half, you know, it was just broken coverage. And Jordan throws it 40 yards and, you know, they completed at the 10-yard line or maybe inside the 10 and had to settle for a field goal. And so even there, they weren't able to do anything once they got down into the red zone. And we did a really good job shutting down Rube Randall in the ball game. And I think we're going to do that again. I think we're going to be able to shut him down. And he's really the center of their offense when they do open up the play action pass. And so it really comes down to your point about the option. I think that our defensive ends on the defensive side of the ball, they have to be able to play the quarterback. I mean, it's just really fundamental option stuff, but they've got to be able to play the quarterback. And then a Robert Lester really has to have a big ball game, and he's got to come up and really play that running back and stay at home like he needs to.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to riff off of, you know, from what you said. You know, I predicted in the first game that Rube Randall himself was worth 10 points. I mean, he's going to score a touchdown, and he's going to make a couple of big plays to move them into field goal position. Clearly, he did not do that. He had maybe three catches for, you know, 20-some-odd yards in the first. I don't know that we can mimic that to quite that level of execution. I mean, if he gets six catches for 70 yards, I'm still going to be pretty pleased with that, given just the superior talent that he is. You know, I think I saw somewhere where potentially he's a first-round draft pick if he elects to go out. So his talent level is up there. If we can hold him under 100 yards, which is still significantly more than he scored or achieved in November, I think that's a win. I think that Jefferson, I think he's a better passer, and he's demonstrated later in the season that he's a better passer than maybe his reputation. But he may have a little bit of rust. I don't think their offense as a whole will, but he may a little bit. But to your point, they're going to try to methodically pound the ball. They have a stable running backs. They're going to try to, you know, downhill on the ball, move the chains, possess the ball. If we can get them into third and longs and we can get them off the field forcing Jefferson to pass, then I think it's going to be tough sledding for the LSU offense. Now, on defense, the biggest thing that I want to get to on defense, and you mentioned Lester, and I think that there's an opportunity certainly for him to emerge. He hasn't played as well this season as he did last season, but he's certainly a talented player, and he's going to contribute for us. But Mosley, we've got to get Mosley on the field.
Well, I do think we have to see Mosley. I wish we could see him in the package. I wish we could see him in there for Jarrell, like we've talked about, but I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, they're going to stick with what they've done. I'm not as concerned about their running backs because they really don't utilize their running backs in the passing game to match up against a Mosley like other teams do, like we do. And so I'm not concerned about him in that standpoint. I'm really not concerned about him. I mean, I guess to your point, what's going to be interesting about that chess match is Mosley has been predominantly the nickel guy. And if I'm LSU, I'm going to try to keep you in your base formation because I'm going to be in my two wide receiver set, fullback, running back. And so I don't think we're going to see as much Mosley as you want to see. I wish we would, but I think that it may be a nice wrinkle. It'd be a great wrinkle to have him in because LSU's going to be in their base set 90% of the time. And they're going to hope to keep Nico Johnson in there and keep Mosley off the field.
I hear what you're saying. You know, their base is going to be, you know, a tight end, fullback, running back, two receivers. And so you want a bigger base package in on your defense. I understand that. But it's Jarrell that often rotates with with Mosley. But from a size perspective, you're not losing any size by having Mosley in. What you're gaining, though, is a more versatile player.
I hear you.
He is much better in the choir.
You're preaching to the choir. They're not going to pull Jarrell, to your point, okay? In my opinion, Jarrell's going to see 40 snaps in this game, and you want him to see 10, and you want Mosley to see 30 of his. I just don't think that's going
to
happen.
I'm reluctant to predict it. I'd love to predict it, but I don't necessarily see us doing it either. I just think having him in the game to, you know, we talked about potentially him spying the option quarterback. He's better in coverage. He's faster for blitzing. And his versatility, and we talked about this relative to the LSU defense before, his versatility shrinks the field because he can do so many more things. He can cover so much more space. He's more fluid. He's not stopping to think about what he needs to do. And then he doesn't look out of sorts nearly as many times as Jarrell does. So I'm going to hearken, you know, Mosley's a player that I'd like to see on the field a whole lot. If he's on the bench, then I'm going to be disappointed we have one of our better defenders on the bench.
I'm with you. The other thing I want to mention in this matchup that, you know, just some numbers that kind of was surprising to me as I went back and looked at some of these stats for the year. You know, LSU has not been a big passing team as far as the number of attempts and completions, like I mentioned, whereas Alabama has got 16 passing touchdowns on the year, LSU's got 21. And so even though they've completed about 70 less passes on the year, they've got 5 more touchdowns. And that just speaks to the effectiveness of that play action pass. They have attempted over 100 more rushing attempts on the year than we have. And it just shows their commitment to the run.
It also speaks, now granted, they're going to have a lot more plays because they've played another game than we have. But I think even if you level that out, I think it does speak to their offense. You know, this is kind of the numbers behind the numbers. Their offense not being as explosive. And so, you know, they'll matriculate on a lot of running balls, you know, running plays, and then they'll pop a couple of passes. But they're holding the ball a lot more. I would be interested in the time of possession breakdown.
They are a less disciplined football team. They are going to commit a lot more penalties, and they're not protecting the ball as well. I mean, you know, they've had a lot more interceptions on the year, a lot more turnovers by their offense than we have. And so we've got to take advantage of those. And so just like we saw in breaking down the last game, when we get a turnover, you know, in between the 30s, we got to put points on the board with it.
I wanted to talk about Chapman. I guess I hate to bring him up in this way, but we need to not block in the back when we're blocking for a pick return.
I do think Jordan Jefferson, if we put him in a situation where he's got to throw the ball, I mean, he's going to make mistakes. I mean, if I go back real quick to the SEC championship game, you know, against Georgia, if it wouldn't have been for turnovers and lack of executing in the red zone, it would have been a much different ball game. I mean, LSU only had 35 carries in that game, which was by far their season low. Jordan Jefferson threw 2 picks in that game, even though he only attempted 13 passes. And so he threw 2 picks out of 13 attempts.
Georgia gave them all they wanted.
But what I'm saying is that even on 13 attempts in a similar attacking 3-4 defense, mm-hmm. they don't have the talent we do. But he threw 2 picks on 13 passes. I mean, I just don't think he's the well-rounded quarterback, and I just think he's a running quarterback who's got flashes. And I wouldn't be surprised real quick as we finish breaking down this side of the ball, I wouldn't be surprised if you see some Russell Shepard and maybe in some type of a wildcat or some type of reverse out of it, and he throws it out of it. Or, you know, we didn't see gimmick plays from Les in this first game like we normally do, and I think you're going to see him kind of take some chances in that area.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Anything else, you know, Bama defense, LSU offense that you want to spend a minute with?
I don't think so. For the most part, we just have to play disciplined against the option like you talked about. I think of everything out there, we've shown them that we can stop the fullback in the middle, and it's just really playing against that option.
Yeah, I think if we can defend the option, which I think that we can, like we talked about, our discipline versus the option will be much improved versus November. But if we can stay home on the option but still allow our cornerbacks to stay on an island with the receivers, not get beat over their heads, this is going to be a tough game for LSU. Why don't you give me Alabama defense, LSU offense, give me players to watch.
You know, I think as far as on the LSU side of the ball, I really think, you know, it's got to be, I think it's two. I think on the one hand, I think it's their tight ends. They don't have the depth at tight end that we do. They don't run three tight ends out there as much. They really do more of one true tight end with a hybrid, more of a wide receiver playing the other tight end. And so those tight ends are key in their option game as far as sealing the ends for them. And then everything's on Jordan Jefferson here. I mean, as far as the LSU side of the ball, I mean, if he comes out and he rushes 10 carries for 75 yards and he's able to move those chains and get those first downs and keep the game close, that's key. And on the Alabama side of the ball, I think he kind of nailed it with the defensive end play or the linebackers. If Upshaw has got his hands in the dirt, we've got to contain outside. I mean, it's almost like I'm willing to give up some to the fullback, but I'm not willing to give up Jordan Jefferson and the running back, you know, outside the tackles. So it's almost like they've got to have confidence in Chapman and Jesse Williams in the middle, and they've got to just flood the outsides and just say, we're not letting you get outside the hashes.
Right. I'm not going to be too far off on the picks here. I think from the LSU standpoint, clearly the key player is Jefferson, Jordan Jefferson. They will go as he goes. And so if he has a monster day, then their offense is going to perform. I don't think he will against our defense. He's going to be the key player to keep an eye on. One player that maybe an under-the-radar player, but a player that I'll throw out there for the LSU offense to maybe keep an eye on is Kenny Hilliard. He's come on at different stages of their season and played well. I don't think he played very much against us, but he's a player that may have a little different dynamic. He may have a little more burst coming out of the backfield than some of their other running back. You know, he's maybe just got to kind of keep an eye on. Our defense, look, I've talked about Mosley. I think he's a critical player to get on the field, so that'll be interesting to see how that happens. But one of the key players on our defense is going to be Dante Hightower. We talked about in the first game just the ferocious hits that he was putting on the LSU quarterbacks. And it just kind of in the echo of the whistle, nothing legal, but if he had a chance to knock the quarterback down, he did it, and he did it with some intentionality. And so if he can do that and he can bring that physicalness to the game, I think that that's going to go a long ways to impacting Jefferson's play.
No, that's a good point. And there's something I guess I want to piggyback on that real quick is, you know, we talked in preparation about just really knocking him out of his rhythm. And it kind of just piggybacks on what you just said there. I want us to have faith in our DBs on an island that we can shut down Reuben Randall. I'm not concerned about their freshman. I want to see some run blitzes. We did not blitz Jordan Jefferson a lot in this ball game. And so what about just sending more guys off the edge, like you said, so that we at least knock him down five or six times in the first half? I mean, you and I saw a couple of years ago, man, when he's been hit, he starts being a lot more deliberate running that option. And yeah, I don't care how you get to him, even if you have to blitz and do the what they call the run blitzes, but just knock him down several times in that first half.
Yeah, I think he's susceptible to being thrown off his rhythm. I think that, you know, if we can blitz him, get a little antsy, if we can lay some wood on him when he tries to run the option, if we can run some delayed blitzes, I think that can mess up his timing. Potentially a delayed blitz could lead to an interception. That might be something to keep an eye on. But, yeah, I think that he's a player that can be disrupted. And I think that we'll go out of our way to try to do that. Well, Tommy, let me switch gears a little bit and just throw out a couple bowl season topics. I got a handful of items here. Give me kind of your reaction, maybe a minute or two on a couple items. What do you think about Coach McElwain going to Colorado State?
I think it's good for Coach McElwain. I think you kind of get in that profession to be a head coach. You want to kind of run things. I was surprised at the balance that he brought with his style of play. When he got to Alabama, I never dreamed that he was going to be able to evolve the balance that he brought to us, as well as just the ability to freelance to our quarterbacks and call audibles and checks at the line of scrimmage and do some of those things that we haven't done. And so I'm going to miss the guy. I believe in Saban. I think Saban can bring in somebody that's going to run. I mean, it's still going to be Saban's offense.
Sure.
But I guess I'm just saying I'm surprised at the balance that McElwain has brought to this football program.
I want to play right off of that. I read something, it made a note here. that I want to share with you and kind of share with our listeners. I think this speaks to, you know, McElwain's, what he brings to the table, and he's probably a little bit underrated. We're scoring 32 a game, averaging over 400 yards per game. This is the third year in a row that we've done that, and it's the most prolific offensive stretch in school history. So that's pretty impressive.
Oh, absolutely.
We matched this season. We matched our production from 2010, despite losing three first-round draft picks and a quarterback. In McElwain's tenure, he has taken a first-year starting quarterback to the national championship game twice. And this year, our 214 yards per game passing and 220 yards per game rushing is the most balanced attack in the country. So I know it's Saban's offense, but someone has to implement it and sort of manage it day by day, because, you know, Saban boasts about, you know, being the highest paid DB grad assistant in the country. So someone's managing the house when it comes to the offense, and that's been McElwain. He will be missed.
Oh, he will be. He will be.
What do you think about Kirby Smart potentially going nowhere?
I mean, I think Georgia's his dream job. I think that I heard somebody say that the Georgia defense saved Mark Richt's job this year, because it was definitely teetering. And I heard Tony Barnhart say something funny, and he said something a few weeks ago about, you lose 10% of the fan base love affair with you for every year you're the coach.
Yes.
So after you've been there a decade, you know, what's left?
Right.
And so, you know, obviously, I love Kirby Smart. I love his enthusiasm and what he brings. I even heard somebody say that he was one of the top two it guys in the country. To, you know, he's in the short list of two guys that are at the top of the list with the defensive coordinator at Texas for the next coaches out there. I got to pull for Georgia and let them have a few more wins, because I think that's where he wants to go. And I hope Mark Richt maybe stays for a couple more years.
Yeah, I know it's kind of bittersweet for the Georgia fans, the success that they had, because a lot of them did want to move on from Richt. And so they're excited that their team is doing well. They actually represented the East in the championship game. But gosh, that means we have to keep Mark Richt. So I kind of got a, you know, sort of some perverse pleasure out of that, knowing that they were going to lose to LSU. But that also means they have to keep the coach necessarily that they don't like.
And what do you think? Do you think it's his dream job, or do you think he's just looking for the right opportunity?
I think it's a little bit of both. He did a couple of interviews, and, you know, the reports are right, took his name out of the running for a couple of jobs as well. There's no reason to think that the Georgia gig would not be his dream job. I mean, he played there, he's from there. There's no reason to believe that it wouldn't be his dream job. As a Bama fan and appreciating what he's brought to us, I would hate to see him go there, but I can understand it. I will say, though, that the jury is not completely out on Kirby finding a head coaching gig. The Penn State job is still open, and I don't think Kirby would necessarily take that job. But when you consider some of the names, Al Golden, Dan Mullen, Pat Fitzgerald, Greg Schiano, and others that are some of the leading candidates for the Penn State job, that could open up a job that then Kirby would have an interest in. So it's not confirmed that he's not going anywhere, but, you know, it looks like he wasn't immediately snapped up. So we'll see what happens there. What do you think about Barrett Jones winning the Outland Trophy, even missing games?
Well, I think he epitomizes really, you know, what's good about football, what's good about these kids and, you know, graduating in 3 years. You know, they got it right coming out of high school. I mean, he was the number two ranked offensive guard at his position by both Rivals and Scout.com coming out, you know, of high school. His ability to use his intellect to learn all these different positions. I mean, I guess what it shows me is you don't have to be 6'8" or 6'6" to 6'8", 360 pounds. You don't have to have the body frame of a DJ Fluker, you know, to play left tackle and be successful at it. If you got the determination and you know the playbook and you know technique and you do what you're taught, is he going to be a right tackle in the pros? No. He's going to make a lot of money one day being left guard or right guard or center, and an NFL team can draft him and say, now I've only got 8 linemen or 7 linemen on my 52-man roster. and I've got a guy that can play anywhere on the line, but he's really going to make his money at guard or center.
Yeah, and he's demonstrated that he can play anywhere on the line. He's played three or four positions this season alone. There's been games where he's played three positions in a game at a pretty high level here at Alabama. So I completely agree with you. I think he does have a runway at a position other than tackle in the NFL, which really is intriguing when you think about the potential for him to come back and potentially play center. Fluker and Warmack have both indicated that they're coming back. And if Barrett Jones comes back and plays center, it'd be nice to see him win the Remington Award of Center of the Year after winning the Outland. What do you think about Trent winning the Doak Walker but not winning the Heisman?
I think you probably know where I'm going to go with this one. I think Trent got hosed. I mean, there's no better way to say it. I think.
But come on, the Doak Walker is a prestigious award.
The Doak Walker is not crap compared to the Heisman. The Doak Walker, okay, yeah, 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 that's awesome. But, you know, what do people remember 10 years later? Do they remember the former Heisman winner, or do they remember the former Doak Walker winner? They don't remember the former Doak. You couldn't sit there and name for me the last five Doak Walker Award winners, but you could probably do the last five who won the Heisman.
Well, you couldn't name the last five Outland Trophy winners, but that was prestigious for Barrett. If you win an award that's awarded to the nation's top running back, then I'll take that guy on my team.
Take nothing away from Robert Griffin. Take nothing away from him whatsoever. But he did not play against the caliber of talent that Trent Richardson played week in and week out. If Robert Griffith or RG3 or whatever we want to call him had our schedule and played LSU, Auburn, Mississippi State, Florida, etc., he would not have put up the numbers that he put up. Neither would, you know, the Stanford quarterback wouldn't have done it either. I mean, are they good guys? Yes. But there's something to, I'm biased, there's something to the SEC and there's something to talent in the SEC. You know, he sat out a lot of fourth quarters. And so, I mean, hell, I guess Saban should have pumped up his stats and let him play a full game, and he would have rushed for another 1,000 yards against the best defenses in the nation.
Well, you know, I think you may have stepped in it there with the level of competition, because that kind of cuts both ways. RG3 at Baylor, they won 9 games this year. Sometimes it takes, you know, 3 years for them to do that. And so, you know, Trent's games against Ole Miss or Mississippi State compared to Baylor's wins against Oklahoma and Texas, you know, sometimes the talent is on your team that allows you to succeed, and sometimes you're raising your team because you're not on as talented of a team and you're facing more talent. So, you know, him elevating Baylor to wins over Oklahoma, Texas, that's pretty impressive.
Great. Good job. I'm proud of you. But that's 2 wins. And he could not have had the year and raised a crappy Baylor team to, okay, I'll say it this way for you. Great, you beat a Texas team that hasn't done anything since they were shell-shocked 2 years ago against Alabama. Great, you beat an Oklahoma team who just always tends to lose the big game. But you couldn't have gone into the SEC this year and had big wins against 5 or 6, you know, LSU, Arkansas, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee. He wouldn't have done it, in my opinion. So, was he the most valuable player for his team? Yes. Was he the most valuable player of any player on any team in the country? No, he wasn't. The media just didn't want the Alabama guy to win another Heisman.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I agree that Baylor could not come in and win games against the team, but I think Robert Griffith could, and I will give you Jordan Jefferson as a proxy.
Griffin's
a much better quarterback than Jefferson.
I don't think you could, but that's okay. What's your next topic?
What do you think about the controversy of the rematch?
I think it's the 2 best teams in the country. I mean, not to go into a much longer podcast here as far as we transition to playoff versus BCS, because you know how I feel about that. But I'm glad that the 2 best teams in the country are playing. I hate the fact that we have this BCS system, and so because we lost in overtime to LSU, that we really shouldn't be in this game. But all these other teams, there's a reason why they're not in the SEC.
Well, they built it under the pressure.
Well, exactly. There's a reason why they're not in the SEC. There's a reason why they're not in the best conference in the nation. And so I love the fact that the SEC is going to win a 6th title, and maybe they'll win a 7th title. But we just lucked up that these teams, like you said, wilted under the pressure. And the fact that six or seven of them had to do it for the two best teams to play in the game,
sure,
is just shocking.
I think we called it in the regular season pregame show for the LSU game, is that the loser of this, that it could have been a very expensive loss if all of the other events didn't take place. The loser of this game, which was us for the first game, didn't get to represent our division in our conference championship game. And very easily, if things had broken another way, would not have had a chance to play for the national title. But still, and it will bear itself, still one of the top two teams in the country. So I think bottom line is the best two teams are matching up. That's supposed to be the objective of the system. I personally find it ironic that the people that are most opposed to this matchup are the people who want a playoff. And what you're going to find a lot of times in a playoff is the best two teams maybe are from the same conference, and maybe they have already played, but they're still the best two teams, and so you're going to get a rematch in a championship setting. So I think we're seeing that, and hey, bring it on. I'm very excited about it.
Well, obviously, I think the two best teams are in the game, but the good news is we'll have a playoff system at some point. It won't resemble what I want it to be, but it'll be there at some point.
Well, I think I'm going to call this one, but you want to come back and talk about Bama offense?
Absolutely, man. I'm ready.
Fantastic. We'll do that. But at this point, I want to say thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. Be sure to join us on Twitter, Facebook, subscribe to our newsletter. All of this can be done on the web, alabamafootballpodcast.com. Drop us an email, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on iTunes, the same name. Also, I want to give a special thanks to Herb FM. They're at herbfm.com. I want to thank them for sharing us with their audience. And until next time, roll tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
All right.